Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very, very accomplished professional from the world of technology from Cambridge, UK, Mr. Brian Norton. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Brian is a crypto and Web3 writer. He's an advocate and a thinker. He's an active member of the crypto community on LinkedIn and publishes a weekly Substack newsletter on crypto and blockchain technology. And he's a passionate photographer. So Brian, before we talk about crypto and Web3, tell me a little bit about your own journey.
Sure. I grew up in the 1970s and 1980s. My father was very involved in technology. And so I grew up surrounded by technology. He had some very interesting contraptions in his study, which always fascinated me, which included a kind of a tele typewriter that was connected via an acoustic coupler to the computer department in Cambridge via a telephone line. So that was like an early sort of modem, I guess you could call it. And he had an Apple IIe and the first Mac. So I was destined really to be interested in technology. So that's been a kind of a strand throughout my life. And art has been another strand, music and photography. Professionally, I started off in contract publishing, which was kind of business to business and business to government reports and technical papers and that kind of stuff. And then moved into the Commonwealth, where I worked for an NGO as a director there for a while, looking at programs that promoted trade and investment on an intra-Commonwealth basis. And was responsible for helping to put together an ICT for development initiative that became a communique that was ratified by Commonwealth heads of state at one of their biennial CHOGM meetings. And I got kind of fed up with the Commonwealth in the end because I felt like it was very good on paper, but, you know, part of it felt like the idea was to maintain the status quo rather than do anything particularly exciting. So I moved into the private sector from there and basically involved in communications outreach, investment outreach programs for governments in emerging markets. So corporate journalism and strategic communications, leadership communications, ghostwriting, that kind of stuff. But crypto's kind of been in the background for me since 2008, 2009, and the financial crisis. But more recently, during the COVID lockdowns, well, a lot of my traditional work dried up because it was contingent on international business meetings. So I decided to double down, really, and turn what had been a sort of a long-term interest into a professional pivot into the space.
Fascinating. So let's talk about crypto and Web3. I'm going to ask you a very basic question for our viewers and listeners. Can you explain what is Web3?
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting topic. I mean, first of all, I think the most important thing to say is that these titles, Web1, Web2, Web3, they're not kind of empirical. They're based on, you know, like models of thinking or concepts, really. Web 2, well, I'm sure you've heard the kind of trope that Web 1 was read-only, Web 2 was read and write, and Web 3 is read, write, and own. And I think, you know, that's a kind of an interesting or succinct starting point. But Web 2 is widely regarded as a sort of an evolution of the original web that was based on a more participatory approach. So it encompasses things like the blogosphere, social media, user-generated content, and all of that side of thing. But we got involved in a kind of a Faustian pact, really, without knowing it at the time. And it's what has since become known as surveillance capitalism, which is the business model where these services that we use, which are for free, are not for free. We're actually the lunch. And through the extraction of data and the control of choke points, both the value, we've been commoditized basically, and the value has been extracted by a series of huge companies, the majority of whom are based in Silicon Valley, you know, people like Google and Facebook, etc. So Web3 is really a kind of a paradigm shift away from that by utilizing blockchain technology, cryptocurrencies and tokenization and the primitives surrounding blockchain technology to create a new kind of internet, which is based on distributed systems, decentralization and sovereignty, user sovereignty over data and the exchange of value over the internet.
Thank you. Great explanation. And we spoke a little bit about crypto and blockchain. Tell me a little bit about how crypto and blockchain can be applied to fields outside of finance.
Sure. I think, I mean, social media is a big one. So we're very used to the fact that we have to go through these choke points to interact with people, and we don't own our social graph. We can get cancelled, you know, or censored. So I think that this new kind of architecture of blockchain technology and the exchange of value lends itself to a more decentralized form of social media. I mean, there are various experiments going on at the moment, but you know, there's the problem of network effects. You know, networks like Facebook, for example, are so far ahead that you know people use them because people use them. So there's a, you know, there are barriers to overcome, and it's very early days. But I would say decentralized social media is a very important use case outside the world of finance. I think, you know, there's the whole creator economy. So if you look at music streaming, for example, music streaming doesn't work for musical artists. You know, there's no money in it. So Web3 and tokenization can be used to forge direct relationships and links between musicians and their fan base. So I think, and you can extrapolate that across the whole creator economy, really, that it's a way of disintermediating the you know, the middlemen, for want of a better expression, from the equation in lots of these kind of areas in terms of user generated content. Likewise, you've got metaverse and gaming, and the ownership of in-world and in-game assets. I think that's going to be increasingly an increasingly interesting space over the next 5 years or so. And I mean, I think you've got supply chains in terms of establishing authenticity and certification and all of that stuff. And decentralized autonomous organizations is a very interesting area, which is very nascent, but I think that's going to have profound implications going forward. So there are a whole host of different applications of this technology outside the world of finance.
Absolutely. And based on all the work that you have been doing, what do you see are some what do you see are as some of the big hurdles for mainstream adoption of crypto, which is under a lot of fire these days, and blockchain, of course?
Sure. I mean, I think the main hurdles are, first of all, what they call UI, UX. So basically the user interface, the user experience. Web3 applications at the moment and decentralized finance and all of these different areas are notoriously clunky in terms of their user interface. Mm-hmm. And that is a huge barrier to mainstream adoption. Mm-hmm. Most people understandably wouldn't touch it with a barge pole. And I think really what's going to happen is that that needs to be fixed, and it will be fixed in a way that people are describing as at the moment as Web 2.5, where you take some of the architectures, but you sacrifice some of the decentralization in order to get a more seamless experience. And I think ultimately a seamless experience means, you know, ultimately something equivalent to Apple Pay, you know, something or having a digital airline ticket in your wallet on your smartphone. Things that aren't going to spook people, that aren't going to lead to security blunders and all the rest of it. And then I think these other two points are interconnected. I think there are a lot of bad actors in the space, a lot of scamminess, a lot of security breaches, and that needs to be cleaned up. And it can only be cleaned up ultimately by thoughtful regulation that balances the need for fostering innovation with protecting consumers and mitigating against any systemic risks. So I think those are the main areas.
No, well said. Great response. But what do you think are some of the security concerns relating to crypto?
Security concerns. I think, again, UI, UX, the complexity of it is a major security concern, because if you take, for example, anyone who's purchasing NFTs on Ethereum at the moment or whatever, using a software wallet, a hot wallet, may not know what they're signing. They may not understand what slippage is about. They may not understand how to bridge an asset from, you know, from ETH to wrapped ETH if it's on Polygon. And it's just the complexity of the user experience and the user interface is, you know, it's just insane, really. And that leads to a major kind of flaw in the systems in terms of security. And I think, you know, more generally, there's a sense of technological immaturity. So these things will be sorted out over time, but we're still very early. And then the other one is some of the primitives, things like blockchain bridges, blockchain oracles, smart contracts. There are inherent weaknesses that make them honeypots for people who want to exploit the system at the moment. So those are all areas, I think.
No, you're absolutely right, and I agree with you. But you also, you know, you said a few minutes ago about regulatory bodies needing to regulate crypto. What do you think these regulatory bodies need to do? Because, you know, a lot of countries are now clamping down on crypto, and yet a lot of them are now using blockchain to be able to launch their own digital currencies. What are your perspectives?
I mean, it's a very interesting area. Like most people, I've been following what the SEC's approach has been. And then more recently, you see major players like BlackRock applying for spot Bitcoin ETFs. So there's a kind of a cognitive dissonance, really, between those two areas. I have been involved in a project in the UK researching DeFi on behalf of regulators who want to get a clearer picture from industry about some of the novel practices and behaviors. And I think, putting the USA to one side, because I think that's a bit of a basket case at the moment. And I think a lot of it might be politically motivated, but I think regulators in other parts of the world understand that this is a transformative technology that has an very positive revolutionary implications, and that they need to strike a balance between, as I said earlier, you know, providing the right kind of environment for fostering innovation, but also protecting against some of the negative consequences and ensuring that there aren't any systemic risks to traditional financial services system, for example. So I think it's a kind of a mixture of being pragmatic, understanding the technology, and also engaging with the industry, who, based on my personal opinion, are extremely willing to collaborate and cooperate in terms of trying to explain some of the intricacies of blockchain technology in areas like decentralized finance to regulators.
Correct. The other aspect that I wanted to get your thoughts on were the NFTs, the non-fungible tokens. What do you think will be their potential impact on creative industries? I mean, of course, I think the hype is over, where someone put painting, or someone, a big Bollywood star would put a small section of his voice and make $500,000 on it. But I'd love to get your thoughts on NFTs and their potential impact on creative industries.
Yeah, I mean, I think NFTs are much more important than they're given credit for in terms of the mainstream media narrative of NFTs and what most people would associate with NFTs, which, as you've identified, is probably kind of overpriced pixelated JPEGs. And not to denigrate them too much, they have a place in the culture and the history. But I did a deep dive into NFTs after listening to a program hosted by Raoul Powell, who's a macro investor interested in crypto. And I realized that I'd fallen into the trap of kind of writing them off as a kind of a quirky cypherpunk, kind of like slightly geeky thing with crypto kitties and all the rest of it. And I realized it after listening to him that he'd done his homework and that it was more profound than that. So I went back and spent 6 months researching the space. And that included all kinds of things like buying NFTs, hanging out in overcrowded Discord spaces, being exposed to the scams and the astroturfing of communities and all the rest of it. And I came back to a book that was written by a chap called Nicholas Negroponte in the 1990s called Being Digital. Wow. And one of his predictions was that anything that can be shipped as bits and bytes as opposed to as atoms will be shipped as bits and bytes as opposed to as atoms. And this was before broadband, so we were still using dial-up modems. And so it was a bit of a stretch at the time, but he was absolutely right. And I think a very good example of that is Blockbuster versus Netflix. Blockbuster was in the business of shipping atoms, and Netflix was in the business of shipping bits, and we know how that turned out. So I kind of see NFTs in the same kind of light, really, that we're in the very early stages of something which is inferring digital ownership and digital certification, and we're living increasingly in a digital world. So I think NFTs are rather profound, at least as profound as Bitcoin, for example. I don't know how you'd carve them up as an asset class, because I think NFTs can be everything from community passes to a means of tokenizing software as a service to membership passes to Gary Vaynerchuk has even suggested that invoices and receipts could be NFTs. So I think really it's to do with the economy of this, in the same way that people now use digital photographs as a memoir. They might take an image of their shopping list on a piece of paper and bring it with them to the supermarket because the cost is so close to zero that it's negligible. And I think the same will be true of NFTs. So I think they'll be used in all kinds of profound ways, and they'll be ubiquitous within, say, 10 years.
Well said. So, Brian, I have time for two more questions. My next question is that I'd love to get your thoughts on what are the ethical implications, if any, surrounding the use of blockchain and crypto?
I mean, it's clear on it's that I've split this into sort of two camps, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's clear that we're somehow moving towards a cashless society.
Correct.
And a lot of the governments seem interested in these CBDC pilot programs, and there are concerns about the programmability of money, all of which is entirely justified in my opinion. And you know, it's like we're moving to a digital a form of digital singularity where you know, all value is not represented in terms of cash and things that are in the real world. And I think that kind of represents a threat, because it's happening so fast that the majority of people don't, for example, well, perhaps they don't even really understand cryptocurrency, so they certainly don't understand the distinctions between cryptocurrencies operating on public blockchains and the kinds of systems being proposed by central banks governments. So I think that kind of represents a significant sort of threat that we need to kind of be aware of before it overtakes us. And then, I mean, I think, you know, there's the origin story of Bitcoin on the other side of that, which is that a lot of this is about freedom. It's about distributed systems. It's about removing the choke points. And it's about, in the same way that if you looked at the Reformation, that you've got a separation of church and state. Really, what this is about is a separation of money and state. And I think that's a very important kind of movement in terms of the democratization of value. So I think, you know, that's very interesting on the flip side. So it's about, you know, people talk about banking the unbanked, but the other side of that, if you look at DeFi maximalism, for example, is that it's actually about unbanking the banks. So, yeah, so there's a kind of a polarity there of different aspects.
Very interesting. And my last question to you, Brian, and this is for the thousands of people who will listen to our conversation. Based on your deep understanding of this whole space of crypto and Web3 and blockchain, what would you say are three lessons you would want a lot of our young viewers and listeners to take away from our conversation?
Sure. I mean, that crypto is about more than money. It's about digital ownership, digital property rights, permissionless innovation. It's about computing and networks, and important issues like decentralization. And I guess it's, you know, it's like adding a new dimension to the existing internet, which is why it's called the internet of value. So I mean, I would see it as being, you know, changing the internet from a sort of a two-dimensional interface to a more three-dimensional interface. The other, which we've just touched on, I think, is that NFTs are a big deal and shouldn't be written off as just a means of selling anthropomorphized cartoon monkey JPEGs, and that, you know, they're at least as important as Bitcoin over the medium to long term. It's like a new evolutionary offshoot of crypto and blockchain technology. And then finally, if people are just starting to get interested in this space, I would say, you know, we're still very early, and I know that's a bit of a kind of a cliche, but if you've suddenly kind of thought, oh, crypto, but Bitcoin's 30,000 and it's too late, you know, I would say firstly, it's not all about sort of financial gain, it's about technology. But if you're interested in this space, don't for heaven's sake feel like you're too late to the party. There's still a lot of room for getting involved. So wonderful. I would encourage people to do so.
Wonderful. And on that note, Brian, and your wonderful lessons, crypto is more than money. It is about digital rights. Second, you said was the non-fungible tokens or the NFTs are a big deal and should not be written off. And the third one, which is very, very interesting, it's not as if the entire crypto or the Bitcoin cycle has come to an end. These are still very early days and it's never too late. Thank you so much for speaking to me about your own journey. Thank you for talking to me at such length about crypto, Web3, and blockchain. I learned several new things from you today. Thank you again for speaking to me and good luck.
Thank you very much. You too. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.